You're listening to The World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger, and my guest is Alejandro Escovedo. What he survived to make his latest record, Burn Something Beautiful, is unbelievable. A couple years ago, Alejandro and his new wife, Nancy, were on their honeymoon on the coast of Mexico when a hurricane hit. It ripped the walls off the house they were staying in, and they were sure they were going to die. In fact, they called everyone they loved to say goodbye. Alejandro tells the story of how they survived, the resulting PTSD that almost ended his career, and how his music and his wife, Nancy, held him together. In fact, we don't usually have artists bring their partners into the studio for an interview, but Alejandro and Nancy held hands the entire time we talked. If you can believe it, a hurricane isn't the only remarkable thing Alejandro survived. He also lived through hepatitis C and a really tumultuous career in rock and roll. From his early days with seminal punk band The Nuns in the 70s, to his cowpunk days with Rank and File in the 80s, to becoming one of the pioneers of Americana and releasing more than a dozen solo records. We're going to talk about how he got here. But first, here's Alejandro Escovedo performing Horizontal, a song from his latest record, Burn Something Beautiful.
Lucky day, she finally walked my way.
Performing live at the World Cafe, that's Alejandro Escovedo with Horizontal. It's off his latest record, Burn Something Beautiful, which was produced and co-written by Peter Buck of REM and Scott McCoy, founder of The Minus Five. Now, these guys are all veterans of the scene. They've got nothing to prove at this point, but Alejandro and the guys still play like they're really hungry.
I've learned from my first producer, Stephen Bruton, that every time you step up to the mic, you really try to project or inspire something great, right? So you're always shooting for more. I'm always never satisfied with the last record. You know, I made those three wonderful records with Tony Visconti,
starting, and Chuck Prophet too, right?
Yeah, with Chuck Prophet co-writing and Tony producing, and I made Real Animal and then Street Songs of Love and then Big Station, you know. And they were all great records and they were all fun to make, but I just felt like I could make something that was really like all of the things that I'd really loved when I started to play music, you know, the Stooges and Mott the Hoople and Bowie, to really get it in there. And the reason I went with Peter and Scott as producers was because they're so good at just getting that really raw, immediate sound, you know. And they play like kids, you know.
They do. It's a remarkable thing to witness. It's really true. And I love that you mentioned that you wanted to incorporate some of the things that you first loved, because I do hear the spirit of punk and your West Coast San Francisco 70s days with the Nuns. Like, I hear that on this, even especially in the backing vocals on that first song that we heard on Horizontal. They're like screaming like punk kids. What do you remember being in it for in the beginning, back in those early punk days?
You know, we were very naive, you know. First of all, I didn't start playing guitar till I was 24. Mm-hmm. And the reason we began to even think about a band was because we were making a movie we wanted to be filmmakers.
Right.
And we were making a movie about the worst band in the world. And since we couldn't play, we became the band in the movie and then eventually ditched the movie in order to, you know, embrace this rock and roll thing, you know. But I had always collected records, and I grew up in a musical family, so there was always music around me. Of the 12 children in our family, 8 of us became professional musicians.
Wow,
you know?
Wow.
And so my older brothers are Pete and Coke Escovedo, who played with Cal Jader, Willie Bobo, Mongo Santa Maria, and then they were best known for playing with Santana, right?
Right.
And then Sheila E. is my niece, who played with Prince, and Juan is a wonderful percussionist. Peter Michael has been MD for, you know, Stevie Nicks. And, you know, so Javier had the Zeros and Mario had the Dragons and we were all players. But I really got into it as wanting to make a film, but always loving rock and roll and always loving, you know, kind of 60s garage-based rock and roll inspired by the Stooges. And I think the only reason we really got into it was to hear the kind of music that we weren't hearing on the radio, you know.
Right.
That was our revolution, you know.
Huh. Was it the lifestyle that went along with it, too?
And the lifestyle, yeah, we loved that, you know. I mean, you know, we had very kind of like innocent goals, really, when we were young. We just wanted to look cool and have leather pants and a good haircut. And then it became more than that, you know, when suddenly I left the Nuns in New York when we went to New York in 78. Mm-hmm. And I started playing with Judy Nylon, who had sang with Brian Eno and John Cale. And the first gig I did with her, the only people in the audience were Chris Spedding, John Cale, and Brian Eno, you know. So it was pretty heady, and then I started to really get into it. And when we formed Rank and File, I really, you know, Tony and Chip Kinman, who were in Rank and File, it was really kind of their band. You know, they taught me so much about songwriting and how to arrange bands and to kind of keep band on the road and stuff. So I took it from there once we started the True Believers. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. You said that you wanted to originally look cool, have a good haircut, wear leather pants. You still look cool, but
you've
been through a whole lot along the way.
Yes.
What are sort of some of the casualties of 4 decades in the rock and roll business?
Well, for me personally, I think the most obvious casualty in a way is the trying to keep a family together, and it's been very real difficult, and it's been it's taken me a long time to find the right person and to be able to kind of come to terms, and my children come to terms with the fact that I was gone for so long, and I've written about that. I have songs about that, and I think a lot of times in the music, I try to kind of explain myself in a way to my children, and really kind of tell them who I am and pass these stories on to them, to let them know that, because a lot of times, quite honestly, music and being a musician is portrayed as something that's kind of a negative thing in a way for a family. It takes the father away from the family, and sometimes the mother promotes that kind of thought, that he's abandoning you or whatever, So I've had those situations. So with me, singing these songs is kind of like speaking to them about who I am and what I've done and what I've really wanted to do, and that music is a beautiful endeavor, and I only did it as an artistic outlet, really,
How do they react to that offering?
I don't know that they really understand that yet,
Because
I don't
they're
know
young
they
or they're not ready to come
I've
around.
Spoken to them about it, but I think it'll, it's always going to take that part where, I'm no longer here, and they'll listen to the songs, and I think they'll be able to understand the story, because they all kind of work as a series of almost like little movies, right?
Yeah. It's kind of, it's amazing, because a lot of people in rock and roll, a lot of songwriters, even confessional songwriters, will deny or mythologize, I guess, how much of what they're saying or singing is truly confessional. And here you are saying, this is a way that you can actually get to know me, Alejandro Escovedo. I'm here. This is my story in these songs.
Right.
That's very brave.
Well, I've always believed, I had a film teacher who always taught us that in the beginning to tell the story of your family, to start there, because it's so universal and everyone has family, everyone deals with family. And for the most part, most families are pretty dysfunctional, right, And so I've always kind of followed that. I always felt, Joe Strummer said we don't need any more love songs, but yet love is such an important facet of our makeup as human beings, that especially now in darker times where people are looking for hope, I think that love is the one thing that needs to be expressed more than anything, and this kind of acceptance of all of us as being one, and that we need to be respectful and loving to each other. So I think that's still very important. And I sing about love all the time. And I do it unflinchingly, and I love to sing about it. And, I'm in love with love was a line of one of my songs, Anchor, And I think my friend Dave Marsh, the writer, told me, he goes, I don't think you've ever written a more truer line.
Mm. Yeah. And you found a really fulfilling love, from what I understand, the last couple years. She's actually here with us.
yes, my wife
today.
Nancy. Yeah.
And congratulations,
thank
married
you.
in 2014. Before we get to the sort of wild part of that love, tell me what you found in that union that you hadn't found before.
Well, it's always wonderful to be accepted for who you are, and to be loved for who you are, and to have someone who adds so much, to kind of like complete the whole, picture. And in Nancy, I found someone I can trust. I have a hard time with trust, so it was wonderful to find someone I truly trust, you know, and believe. And we've been very supportive of each other. It's like that perfect combination where I falter, she'll pick up the pieces, and where she kind of, you know, needs me, I'm there for her. So, and we're both very creative. And, you know, Nancy did the cover of the album. That beautiful cover is all Nancy.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, and all her photographs. And since Nancy is in the movie industry also, she has that eye for what I love about cinema. And so it's worked out perfectly, I think.
So you found love, and I understand you had quite the dramatic honeymoon. Which song on the record is about that experience on your honeymoon?
Luna de Miel is a song that's really about the hurricane and what we went through after the hurricane.
All right, let's listen to a little bit of Luna de Miel, and then Alejandro Escovedo will come back and talk about that incredible story. This is Alejandro Escovedo on The World Cafe. That's Alejandro Escovedo, Luna de Miel, off his record, Burn Something Beautiful. Alejandro, can you tell me what happened a couple of years ago when you took your new wife, Nancy, out on your honeymoon?
So we were married 2 years ago, 2014 it was, and we were married on September 6th. On September 7th, we went on a honeymoon to Baja, California, this area of Baja that I love very much, and I wanted Nancy to see it. It was in September that we went. Beautiful 6 days of just bliss. The beaches were wonderful. The water was wonderful. We were in love and just going for long walks and talking about our future and getting to know each other in a way that we hadn't had the opportunity to, because we'd been on the road for about a year. And so on the seventh day, we were hit by a Category 4 hurricane, Hurricane Odile. And it happened so suddenly that we were trapped. We were trapped. We were staying at a friend's villa that was only maybe 150 yards from the ocean, right? And so I remember we had enough time to actually go out and get candles and extra water and stuff, but we had no idea what we were in for. Nancy grew up in Galveston, Texas, so that's why she had a little more understanding that we were, you know, about to be involved in something very dangerous, you mm-hmm. know. And I had no idea. I had been in a hurricane before, but I really didn't understand it. And so I remember we came back, and our host is a surfer, a big wave surfer, surfs 40-foot waves, has been surfing all his life. He's a real, you know, seasoned waterman. And I remember he looked at us and he says, I'm not feeling good about this. I don't want you guys to be in the honeymoon suite, which was up at the top on this tower. He goes, I want you to go to the back. But as we kept watching this, you know, tropical storm turn into this just deep purple blob that was just like so ominous, you know, and I remember that once it started to hit, we knew we had to, that it was going to be a hard one, and that we would probably not be able to communicate with anyone for a while. So we actually called our children to say goodbye, that we didn't think that we would see them again. We called her parents and left messages saying goodbye, and then the storm started to hit. And it started to hit right around dusk, but it came earlier. And when it came with a ferocity that I'd never imagined even. And so, look, first thing that happens is all the electricity is just dead, you know. And then the wind comes, and it lasted 12 hours. It hit us right on the head. It was only moving 12 to 15 miles an hour. And we had lit candles, and then we suddenly realized the candles are sucking all the oxygen out of the room, so we had to blow out the candles. The water and the wind was forcing the front door, which was a heavy door, to buckle and just like buckle, and water's coming in through the windows. And finally, the eye of the hurricane comes, and suddenly it's very calm. And we saw this flashlight, and someone's yelling, "Bobby, Robert, Robert, Robert." That was our host, you know. And it was the guy next door who was a Navy SEAL. He and his family, he had his kids, and he had moved them to the back of his property also. But he says, "The house is going to go. The house is going to go. It's really going to go." The palm trees had fallen like toothpicks, and the back gate was now trapped. So we were trapped in this thing. And we had enough time to go out and see. It was amazing because you could see the stars suddenly. And then suddenly the front of the house went. And it fell off and went into the ocean. And this tide comes around the corner. And we all ran away from it. And everyone says, "Okay, we're okay." And now here comes the tail end of the hurricane. And another 6 to 7 hours of it. And that's even more ferocious than the first half. So it was at that point that we kind of finally found our final place that we could go to. And we're thinking, you know, there's surfboards in the garage. If when it comes, you know, we were positive that we were just going to get washed out to sea. And somehow we survived it. And then it took us a week to get out of Mexico. And I mean, that was another story, you know, where we were constantly being told we were going to be lifted out. We weren't lifted out. And we were even supposed to be on President Obama's VIP list at one point, and we're not lifted out. And if it wasn't for like these little kind of angels that came along the way and saved us, we never would have been able to leave.
That's Alejandro Escovedo. Coming up, he talks about how that near-death experience almost ended his career, but instead sparked his latest album, Burn Something Beautiful, on the World Cafe. Hey, welcome back to the World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger. My guest is Americana pioneer Alejandro Escovedo, whose latest record is called Burn Something Beautiful. It was produced and co-written by Peter Buck of REM and Scott McCoy, founder of The Minus Five. Before the break, Alejandro told me about the hurricane that nearly killed him and his new wife, Nancy, back when they were celebrating their honeymoon off the coast of Mexico a couple years ago. When the storm passed, they found their way to safety, but their ordeal wasn't over yet.
Well, we were unaware of something called PTSD. And so being musicians and artists, we're so crazy that we had a gig as soon as we came home. And we did that gig and then prepared to go on tour with the Fauntleroys, another band I had. We did the tour, came back. We had maybe a week to prepare to go on a tour with Peter, Scott, Kurt, and Bill Rifflin, who was going to be our drummer.
This is touring your own
this
music.
Is for this record,
this is for this
right?
record, okay.
So
yeah.
We were going to tour for 2 months and then go straight back to the studio. And before I left, I started to get these brain seizures where I would go into like a psychedelic coma for these periods of time where I wasn't myself. And I was starting to say really weird, bizarre things, you know. And it came and went. I entered a club. It was sold out in Portland. There's just hundreds of people there. And it happened again. I went into a coma and I wasn't able to perform. And I had to be rushed to the emergency room. I called my doctors and they all thought it was kind of neurological, excuse me. And I was concerned because I still had hepatitis C, you know. So I thought it might be kind of be kicking in again or something, you know. And I remember we decided to take a day off, and then we were driving south from Portland to California, and Peter called me on the phone. He said, "Alejandro, you know, my drummer almost died on me in Spain when Bill Berry had a brain aneurysm." You know, I don't know if you remember that,
yeah.
But he almost died on stage, and he says, "I don't want that to happen to you. We're going to postpone the tour. We'll come back. We're going to lose a lot of money, but that's cool. We'll get it back, you know." And so that left Nancy and I on our own, and we decided to go to specialist in Northern California, stayed with my sister, and had MRIs and all that stuff done. And they came back saying, you know, I have bad news and good news. Good news is we didn't find anything. Bad news is we don't know what it is. We can't find anything. So, but he said, you know, they're starting to be concerned more with the story of the hurricane, you know, and how that may have triggered this. And so we went back to Austin and we sought some psychological help, and we found someone really wonderful who talked about PTSD, and that's what we had, and we worked our way through it, you know. And then Nancy got a job in Dallas working on a TV series called Queen of the South. We really kind of healed. I got rid of hepatitis C.
You did?
I'm cured of hepatitis C.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And so, like, it's gone completely. And I've had my 6-month blood test, and it's just gone.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah.
And so.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so that happened, and I wrote the album, and so it's all positive and good.
Yeah. We've come through the other side,
yeah,
huh?
We have. Yeah, we have.
Jeez,
yeah.
I'm happy to hear that, and I want to ask you a bit more about Hep C and overcoming it in a moment. But before we move on completely from just the depth of PTSD and what that is, I'm wondering what that did to your music in the interim. Like, was there a moment where you weren't sure if you were going to do music anymore when you had to call off the rest of those shows and weren't sure what was going on with you?
You know, I was really in a state of, like, not knowing anything in a way. You know, I had no idea what was happening to me physically, and something was happening to me mentally also. And so at that point, the only thing I had to go to where I felt really grounded outside of Nancy was music, you know. And so we really kind of just immersed ourselves in that. And it was that. It's always been music that has saved me. You know, we've all had songs that have guided, helped us or shown us ways to point in new directions, you know. They're kind of benchmarks for where we've been in our life. And we look back and maybe can laugh or kind of shake our heads about where we were at that point in our lives and see how far we've come, you know, hopefully.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the song on the record, I Don't Want to Play Guitar Anymore.
Yeah.
And I know you didn't play it for us in session today, but I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about where that song came from, because I think it's sort of the counterpoint to using music as solace and safe place.
Well, you know, that song came to us through Peter Buck, right? Peter brought that to the table. And I related it to when I had hepatitis C, when I was first diagnosed with hepatitis C. And they told me I only had a year to live and that I would probably never play again, you know. And I had, for some reason in my head, I began to blame music and the lifestyle for where I was physically. And I stopped playing my guitar for like a year. I did not play guitar. And I realized, you know, that that wasn't the case. And once I began to play guitar again, I began to feel better again, you know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Alejandro Escovedo. His new record is called Burn Something Beautiful. Alejandro, you said that you were blaming music at the time of your diagnosis for hepatitis C. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that you saw a lot of your peers do the same things that you were doing and seemingly sort of move through without consequence.
Exactly.
How do you square that?
Well, you know, it's like a roller coaster ride, you know. You definitely, there are some serious lows where you ask yourself, why me, you know? Why was I the one where the guy next to me drank twice as much? He did twice as many, bad things for your body as I did, yet he's fine, you know. Is it karma? Did I do something bad? You know, am I being paid back? You go through all sorts of things, you know. Catholic guilt probably played into it a little bit, you know, and then you begin to understand that, you know, there's part of it too that makes you very ashamed and kind of, you know, you feel kind of dirty in a way, you know, like a carrier or something, you know, and I don't know, you know, it's there's a point to where you finally give it up and you understand that feeling sorry for yourself is not going to get you anywhere, and that actually working on yourself you'll be able to help other people through this experience, you know. And so I worked on myself to get better as a person, as a father, as a friend, as a musician, as a songwriter. And I thought that maybe that example would help other people. And so, you know, I learned a lot going through all of that, and I passed it on to my friends who, you know, I've had other friends who find it very difficult to accept help from other people. And I learned that you're actually helping other people by accepting their love and their help, you know. So, you know, there's little things like that. But yeah. In the end, you find that music is salvation and love is salvation. And really it was, you know, I also found the love of a larger, much larger community that I had known even existed for me, you know, a family that I wasn't aware of.
Let's hear one about redemption. Let's hear Redemption Blues. This is Alejandro Escovedo from Burn Something Beautiful, live at the World Cafe.
Thank you.
That is the very stirring Redemption Blues, Alejandro Escovedo, here, my guest at the World Cafe. You, Alejandro, have been through so much that we've talked about. You've been through Hep C, which you are now clear of, which I'm thrilled to learn today. You have had PTSD. You've lived, you know, 4 decades in rock and roll. You've been through a lot of scary stuff. Is there anything that you're still scared of at this point?
I'm scared of not creating, you know. That's a fear. And not creating things that are meaningful and you know, honest and you know, artistic, I guess. You know, that's all I want to do, is to continue to make records. And I'm going to start working on a book, you know. And I'm really want to... to the day I die, I really want to just create and somehow, you know, I've taken on this role. You know, you become an elder statesman, you know, and a mentor to younger kids who are starting, and see my life as one of perseverance and someone who hasn't given up and continues to produce records that are still, I think, vital, you know, at this point. You know?
Stellar. Like, this is a stellar record.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, and so at my age, not everyone is doing that. A lot of people, you know, either, you know, have reached a point to where they can rest and retire. I never want to retire. Mm. You know, I had a manager, I was telling him about Ian Hunter, how much I love that Ian Hunter is 70 years old or whatever, and he's still better than ever. And he's always been my hero. And I said, you know, he goes, well, do you want to be touring when you're 70 years old? I go, hell yes, I want to be touring when I'm 70 years old. There's nothing more I want to do.
Alejandro Escovedo, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a great honor and a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, and welcome to the station.
Hey, thanks. Much more coming your way on The World Cafe.